This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, together with Ti Xiao Ik and Kelly Anissa. Today, some stories that are linked to the National Wage Index, which was just launched on Tuesday.
So we're looking at whether women are paid fairly in our workforce and whether the National Wage Index will close the gender pay gap.
And we also look at how this National Wage Index could increase the participation of retirees and those with disabilities in the workplace, in the workforce. And also, we're asking you a question on Twitter. What do you believe to be the main cause of the gender pay gap? Is it because women are family caregivers? They tend to work part-time. They face barriers to progress. Gender pay gap is a myth. Also, share with us your experience when it comes to remuneration in employment. Have you received any unfair treatment or have any good stories to share? To join the conversation today, tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
All right, so those stories coming up after this. For now, it's 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, that was Dolly Parton with 9 to 5. You are listening to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. So on Tuesday, Human Resources Minister M. Kulasekaran launched the National Wage Index, which will serve as a guideline to measure changes in wages and salaries of workers in Malaysia's labour market. But something else that you have mentioned at the launch, that he was also saying that the government are focusing on increasing the participation of women, retirees above 60 and disabled persons in the labour force. And those are the areas that we're going to be looking at in today's show.
So sort of a primer on the National Wage Index. It measures changes in wages and salaries within public and private sectors. It's actually based on quarterly surveys of payroll information and adjustments from companies. And it's intended to be published on a quarterly basis. Mm-hmm. So it covers jobs across Malaysia. And with regard to the private sector, it covers 18 industries and 9 major occupation groups. So, employees and job seekers like you and me, we can use this index to benchmark changes in our wages to broader labour market trends. We can use it to assess how our salary changes over our career paths. As for employers, they can use it as a guide to set pay levels for salary adjustments and as input to their HR policies. Mm-hmm. So when the minister launched the index, as you said, Juliet, the government is looking at ways to increase women's participation in the workforce as well.
Yeah, so the reason we're talking about women is because Malaysia's labour force participation rate for women is just about 54%, and that's the percentage of women who are either working or looking for a job. Mm. And 50% is low, you know, both in absolute and relative terms. And as a comparison, men's participation rate is about is about 80%.
But more women are entering the workforce, at least, so that's good. And between 2010 and 2016, women's employment in Malaysia grew at a faster pace, at 4.5% annually. So this is compared to the male employment at 2%.
And in the government's 11th Malaysia plan, one of our priorities is to improve the female labour participation rate. And they say they want to improve it to 56.5% by 2020. Seems like a bit of a low bar, though, considering we're at
54.
Yeah, so it's a 2.5% increase. We have to start somewhere, I suppose. But, you know, it's really telling. We are a middle-income country going towards a high-income country. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have such a low rate of participation. And we know that historically, there are so many barriers to women entering and staying in the workforce.
Definitely.
Yes, and are being treated equally compared to their male counterparts. I mean, what would you think are some of the, whether it's systemic or cultural barriers for women in the workforce, you know?
I think it's that very simple thing that, you know, women are assumed as soon as they become mothers that they should drop out of the workforce to become the primary child caregivers. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, and I've seen, well, this is just anecdotally, but I've also seen many cases where if their parents, I mean, a lot of us now are in sandwich generation, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of us with elderly parents as well, if they fall sick and they need also another primary caregiver. It tends to be the daughters or the daughters-in-law. Daughters-in-law, sometimes. And that's just based on, you know, my own personal experiences of seeing people, you know, in that kind of situation.
And I also noticed that with women who leave job, who leave their jobs, and, you know, and for those of them who want to come back, I realized that, because I've spoken, I know someone who feels that she may not have the skills or the necessary knowledge to jump back into the workforce. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if they've taken a break for like 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're left behind or that they're missing out on some skills to, you know, come back, and it will be different for them. So I think a lot of them are also intimidated.
Absolutely.
By that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, things change rapidly now, the kind of technological advances, the skills and the equipment, even sometimes the kinds of jobs that people look for now, all this changes so rapidly. So what 5 years may not seem like much, but you do feel like you're left behind already compared to the younger ones around you who have had that chance, you know, to stay on.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure how, you know, some employers feel. I can only just wonder, you know, if they see that you've taken, you know, a 5 to 10 year gap, for example, to look after your children, let's just say, you know, whether when they see that on your CV, whether they're that willing to take a chance on you. I mean, BFM, of course, was a very good exception. You know, he accepted a lot of women who had been out of the workforce for a very long time, and I certainly think that has paid off.
Yeah, I agree. I was just going to say that I have benefited from that kind of open policy at BFM, because I sort of had the same kind of situation. But, you know, improving women's participation, what can we do, right? I mean, we know education, that's the foundation, that's going to be the cornerstone of making sure that women can be in the workforce. And, you know, ensuring universal access to primary education, for one, which I think Malaysia does very well.
Yeah.
Increasing secondary and tertiary education, another area which Malaysia is actually doing very well for women. We know that university enrollment, women actually outnumber men in terms of the general enrollment. And we can see the gains. So these higher enrollment rates of women have translated into higher share of skilled occupations in women's employment.
But I think another thing that we really need is also more family-friendly policies. You know, longer maternity leave, childcare facilities. I know that's something, Sherry, you and I wish we had.
Yes.
It was, you know, and it was just announced that Parliament, the Parliament building will establish childcare facilities for MPs, parliamentary staff, and even journalists who are going over to cover Parliament. So that's, I think, a wonderful step forward.
Yes, it is.
Definitely. And also economic policies. For example, the government has announced tax exemption of up to 12 months for women who are rejoining the workforce.
Yeah, so that's what we were talking about, right? So, you know, if you're coming back after a break, some of these things will ease the burden that you are taking on. And speaking of economic policy, so we come back to the National Wage Index again. How is this going to help ensure parity in remuneration? Is it really going to help to encourage greater participation of women? I mean, really, if you break it down, the data in the index is not disaggregated by sex. Mm-hmm. So there's no way of knowing what are the pay differentials, which we can only guess at from other random surveys.
Sure.
So hence, women have no evidence base to argue that they are being paid less than their male counterparts. So they have no capital to negotiate for parity.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember where I saw this recently. I think we should be more open with discussing salaries, especially among co-workers. That's what my friends and I do.
I'm not sure about that.
My friends and I, like, when we graduated, this is a question we always ask. Like, you know, are you being paid enough? And we want to know if we're being paid fairly.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of know which one of us are being paid fairly lower than everybody else. And I remember...
Fairly lower.
Much lower. Like, for a lot of us, especially for fresh graduates, we earn about, what, 2005? I know someone who was earning 1008. And, you know, that is significantly lower. You know, so, and also, quoting from an analysis by Dr. Nagin Wagefi of the Penang Institute, according to the Salaries and Wages Survey Report 2016, Malaysian women, if in employment were paid about 97.7% of what their male counterparts earned on a monthly basis, meaning the gender pay gap is 2.1%. However, there is a raw pay gap, that looked only at the median salary of those in employment, irrespective of education attainment, job type, position, and experience. So it also it's also inconsistent across industries, locations, and ages.
Yeah, so Dr. Nagin also said that when you break it down, you will start to see pay discrepancies within and among occupations, you know. And for instance, there are fewer women in high-paying sectors such as engineering, and there are more in social sciences, education, arts, and more lower-wage jobs like cleaning and, I suppose, clerical work as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so women are far less likely than men to be promoted to kind of top management levels. So, yeah, so they tend to occupy lower-paying junior positions.
Yeah. And we know that on average, at least, women bear most of the burden of domestic responsibilities. And for some of these women, it's they're the only ones who are bearing this responsibility, right? And women have to do more housework. They work fewer hours, which translates into less pay. But conversely, men do not vary their working hours according to the housework they do. In fact, they can put in more hours at work because women take on a greater share of household responsibilities. And we have a work culture of rewarding those who put in longer hours.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Also in, you know, higher age groups, the gender gap widens even further. Women in their 50s and 60s earn about 23% and 30% less than their counterparts. And, you know, kind of due to the time spent doing all that unpaid domestic work, women are less likely to advance in their careers and are sadly left behind by the time they reach that age.
Absolutely. So, you know, you can see there are still so many barriers to women's equal participation in the workforce. The key word there being equal.
Equal,
it's not just about, you know, saying, look, we do hire women and therefore we're good. Mm-hmm. But it's not that. It's about employing them on fair terms. It's about giving them a level playing field where they are not being penalized because they juggle family and household responsibilities.
Yeah. And I think that for a lot of women in this position, they don't really have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I know of a relative who had to stay home and take care of her kids because she had no one else to take care of the kids for her. So I think because she was earning lower, she a lower
compared
salary.
Compared to her spouse.
To her spouse, she had to be the one who stayed home.
Yes.
And again, that's been years now. It's very difficult for her to just jump back in.
Yes.
Yeah, and I know, like, for my in my own personal case, like, deciding to come back after having my daughter, it was... Okay, what makes sense? Like, does it make sense to continue working or to look to hire a helper, right? So you got to make all these sort of economic decisions and figure out your salary and figure out whether you can actually afford to do it, whether it makes more sense to come back to work or whether it makes more sense to stay at home and look after your children.
And in all honesty, I think maybe Juliet's regretting the decision to rehire me.
Never, we'll never regret that decision.
In all honesty, even when we do make the decision to come back to work, we are still, you know, bearing that double burden.
Definitely.
That the having to juggle, you know, your domestic responsibilities, which very often is having to take time off work, you know, emergency leave to do all the things that, whether it's related to taking care of kids or your elderly parents, you know, and it's really, it's your luck whether you get an understanding employer who won't penalize you for
Definitely.
That. We know that these are investments, though, that pay off for companies. There are many benefits to hiring women. You know, across the board, we already see that the contribution by women to Malaysia's economic growth has been increasing at a faster pace in recent years. I mean, women are equally skilled. In fact, we bring different skill sets and perspectives to the workplace. You know, we increase productivity, we increase competitiveness as well. So, I mean, sure, we talk about the National Wage Index today. It's a good starting point. It provides a benchmark for all employees to negotiate for fairer salaries. But there's still a lot more to unpack here. When women aren't even able to negotiate for starting salaries in the same way that men are empowered to do, because of social and cultural barriers, we have a long, long way to go.
Yeah. I mean, but it is very promising that, you know, the Minister of Human Resources is, you know, looking into it, you know, has said that it's going to be a concerted effort, I suppose, by the government to look into
and
it.
And it's so something, at least we have this, and we can ask for more now. We can ask for better data.
Yeah.
We can ask for companies to show you know, the kind of disaggregation, you know, that we were talking about.
Exactly. So anyway, we're asking you on Twitter, what do you believe is to be the main cause of the gender pay gap? Kelly, what are the answers so far?
So far, 44% of you have said it's because they face barriers to progress. 37% of you said the gender pay gap is a myth. And 20% of you say that it's because women are family caregivers. So,
right. I mean, I, in a way, maybe can't blame people for thinking gender pay gap is a myth because there are just not enough solid numbers. So this kind of national level survey is the kind of thing we need to break it down for people to see with their own eyes.
So if you'd like to join in that conversation, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 7733-2900. We're going to take a short break, but before that, here's Aretha Franklin and the Eurythmics with Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.